Okay. My husband will appreciate that with his two hearing aids. Well, thank you so much for having me again. I was reading in my prayer journal, and it was 5 years ago in January that Paula and I were up here, and we were talking about our need to move to a more central location, and we were talking about how it was back in 2014 that Sue Morley called us to prayer. Well, we're still praying. And as you know, 5 years later, we are in our central location on Center Street. And as God always does, he has provided more abundantly than we ever thought he could. Well, no, I shouldn't say that, than we ever thought he could. But, you know, miracles come and you're still surprised, even as a believer. Because, you know, in 2015, we found the location, we moved in, and it was like a few months later, we were like trying to advertise and get the word out, and somebody wrote us a check for $20,000 so we could advertise, a money miracle. And then later the same year, we're like, it would really be great if we could get the space right behind us and put in an ultrasound service. We're still in 2015, and we were praying about that, thinking that would take a long time. And somebody else wrote a check out for the full amount, $48,000. And so within praying in 2014, opening in 2015, by 2016, if you come to CareNet now, we have the beautiful building, we have our ultrasound service, and yeah, God is just amazing. And you guys are already all part of that. In fact, it was people in your fellowship that joined the steering committee and, you know, spent 2 years so that the first center could open back in 2002. And you've always been so generous in donating. So it's just wonderful to be able to come and share with you all that God is doing in CareNet. It's kind of hard right now with what's been going on in Maine as far as the life issue goes. There's been a lot of what would you say, bills passed this last year that are really not supporting life here in Maine. And yet, we know that the most important thing we do is pray. Last week at our church, we were talking about prayer, and one person raised their hand and said, well, why do we even pray if God already knows what's going to happen? What's really the purpose of prayer? And then a whole bunch of us raised our hand to answer that. And in my mind, prayer is, you know, we know as believers that the spirit world is so much more real than the flesh that we're living in now. This is so temporary, and eternity is going to be forever. So when we pray, we're taking our flesh and we're just aligning it with our spirit, and we're figuring out, you know, that's why we can be joyful, because when bad things happen, when dark things happen, we know that it's also temporary, and God is going to work this all out for good. I want to share with you something that C.S. Lewis said in a letter to a friend. He wrote this right after World War II, and to me, this kind of exemplifies what we're going through right now. And this is what he said. One mustn't assume burdens that God does not lay upon us. It is one of the evils of rapid diffusion of news that the sorrows of all the world come to us every morning. You've got to remember, he was writing this back in 1945. He was talking about rapid diffusion of news, and look what we have today. I mean, 24 hours, it's bombarding us. I mean, we were talking about the weather this morning, how, you know, 5-6 inches of snow all of a sudden becomes an emergency. It's so different, but this is what he's talking about back in 1945. He says, I think each village was meant to feel pity for its own sick and poor, whom it can help. It is the duty of any private person to fix his mind on the ills which he cannot help. This may even become an escape from the works of charity we really can do to those we know. A great many do now seem to think that the mere state of being worried is in itself meritorious. And he says, I don't think it is. He goes on to say, we must, if it so happens, give our lives for others. And I'm going to stop there for a minute because he's talking about giving our lives for others, and he's talking about keeping it local. And I realize when I say local, because we have the world today at our fingertips, I think God calls each individual and each fellowship to, there's things that happen personally that call us to help. And I'm going to give you an example. I have three children that have been adopted from China, and all of them were involved with a program called Love Without Boundaries, which was started by one woman who adopted a child from China, went back to see where her child had come from, and the conditions were so bad. She came back to this country and said, God, it's terrible, and I don't know what I can do, but I'm going to give myself to it if I can. You know, tell me what you want me to do. And she got a word from God that said, yeah, I'll take you up on that. And now she's got this international program where they take kids out of orphanages and provide foster homes for them. Three of my grandchildren went through foster care before they came over here. So even though it's in China, I'm connected to that ministry. So that's what I mean about, you know, things that are not right in our neighborhood, but we still feel a connection for. But CareNet is definitely something that's going on right here at home, something that you have been a part of, and more churches. What, there's 45 churches right now here in Midcoast Maine that are part of. And I'd like to just give you a scenario of a few things that have happened just within the last few weeks at CareNet. We got a call from a girl who wanted to come in for a pregnancy test. And when she walked through our doors, I was really surprised to see her because I knew her. I knew her when we lived up in Down East Maine, and I knew her family. And she came from a very strong Christian pro-life family. And her pregnancy test was positive. She was thinking it would be. And she said to me afterwards, she said, you know, I called my older sister to tell her I was pregnant, and she said to me, you know, there's a pill that can take care of this. And she stopped and said, but I knew I couldn't do that. I knew I wouldn't be able to do that. But you know what really sat in my heart was that her older sister, who had been raised in a pro-life home, would be saying that. And I think that's one of the things that we as Christians need to be doing, is making sure the next generation really understands about this issue, that, no matter when or how, what we were just saying, God knew us in the beginning. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. And then just last week, I got a call from a girl who wanted to know if she could have an ultrasound, and we were talking, and when you don't know how a girl is, you know, where she's at, what we'll say is, are you questioning what to do with this pregnancy? And she hesitated a moment, and then she said, no, we've decided to keep it. And I'm like, congratulations! And then she stops and says, you know, you're the first person to congratulate me. And that's kind of what we are at CareNet. When somebody comes in and it looks pretty much like everybody thinks it would be better if I didn't carry on with this pregnancy, we're like, no, you can. You can do this, you know. You've got what it takes to be a mom, or you've got what it takes to be a dad. Just within the last couple months, we've had two experiences with college girls. One of them was a girl that came to our banquet, which was really nice, a Bowdoin College student. And so afterwards, I sent her an email, and I just said, could you give me your impressions? It was really great to have a Bowdoin College student there. And she said, you know, I kind of heard about pregnancy help centers, but I really didn't know what they were all about. And she, you know, she was like, it's really encouraging to see that there's that much help out there. And she also said, though, you're going to have a hard time reaching my generation. She said, we are Well, they're very pessimistic about the future, about bringing children into this world. And yet we were so encouraged that she was there. And then we got another email from a girl at a college in New York State. She's a Maine girl. But for her senior project, she is doing her project on abortion. And so she contacted a number of our pregnancy help centers, and she wanted to know if she could we could do an interview with her. And to be perfectly honest, sometimes we're a little hesitant because you don't know where people are coming from when they want to do these things. But I said, no, that would be great. And I met with her over at the library in Brunswick, and she taped, and we talked for an hour and a half. And she, too, said to me, you know, I'm not sure where exactly she was coming from, but she was saying, you know, until I started this project, I didn't even realize about pregnancy help centers and what they can do. So it's that lack of education, and, you know, that's one of the reasons we have our Facebook page, we have our Instagram. It's they are trying to get the word out to people, you know? Right before Christmas, like the day we were closing for Christmas break, the day before that, I should say, we get a call from a girl, and she said, I have a neighbor who's due in 2 weeks. She's moving into an apartment tomorrow. The apartment doesn't have anything. She doesn't have anything. Can you help us? And, of course, we said, sure, bring her in. So the next day, well, that afternoon, the other volunteer there and I, we went through. And, of course, you know how it is at Christmas. Everybody's feeling very giving. So we laid out on the conference table in the back room like a mini baby shower right there, because we have all the wonderful used clothes, and we went into the boutique, and we got out new things for her. And when she came in the next day with her neighbor, we were walking back, and I said to her, oh, it felt like a baby shower, just getting all this stuff ready for you. And the girl's comment was, I never thought I'd have a baby shower for this baby. And she was so happy, and, I mean, we filled a whole bin for her. Since she didn't have anything and the baby was due so soon, we sat down and we ordered a brand new pack and play, which was sent to the neighbor's house so that she could, you know, have a place to get it. And then this lady has really been helping her. We've been in contact and helping this girl some more. One of the things I'd like to lay on your heart for prayer is, this last year, two of the girls that came to CareNet, when they walked through our doors, they were homeless. And because they were pregnant, they were able to get up higher on the voucher program. And so by the time their babies came, both of them were in apartments. But we've seen this as a huge need, the homeless population in the Brunswick area, and the women that come through our doors. So we've been praying about that. We're still praying 9 to 10 on Monday mornings. And right before the banquet in October, I got an email. The center got an email from a girl that said, you know, for about 30 years, this has been on my heart, a home for unwed mothers. The banquet in October, I mentioned that. I said, if anybody else, you know, if God's laid this on your heart, can you contact her? And we can, you know, see what we can do. And after the banquet, actually, a married couple did contact and said, yes, we're interested too. And since then, there's a steering committee. Two of us from the CareNet board are on it. But there's like 9 of us, 5 women, 4 guys. We've been meeting every other Sunday afternoon over at the conference area in CareNet, because just like that journey with CareNet, the pregnancy center, to bring it to fruition, it's going to take time, and you've got to, you know, zoning and nonprofit org status and, of course, finding a home and volunteers. But as anything, you know, that journey of a million miles begins with that first step. And we've taken that, and we've kind of jumped ahead, a couple of us have, because there was a house in Brunswick that looked like it would really work out well. So a couple of us went over to see it, and we've already gone. The committee went up to the Shepherd's Godparent home in Bangor, and we met with the director. This was right before Christmas. So we we kind of have a vision of what we need for a home. So we walk into this home in Brunswick, get the tour, and it's like it's perfect. It's the kind of place you could walk into and invite girls to come in the next day almost, if you had all the paperwork stuff done. The one glitch is it's $500,000 that they want for this home. And I'm not saying it is the home. Paul Bassamo is the chairman of the steering committee, and as he said, we're going to work plan B, and we're going to wait and see what plan A is, which will be God's plan in the end, and who knows how long it will take. But that's something to be praying about, you know, that we can find a home, that we will be able to welcome girls, because we've seen that we're walking alongside them when they come in and we're helping them out, but there's so much more that we could do if we actually, you know, had them close by and had that extra step to help them too. I already saw a sign that I would want to put up in a home for unwed mothers, and it says, "A single mother who has trust in God is never raising her children alone." And that is so true. And that is what we're trying to share with every person that walks through our door. And the way we do that usually is not with a person that comes in for a one-time visit, but a person that stays for parenting classes, that keeps coming back for material needs. We have a girl that's involved with Wiccan, and her child now is almost 2. And she was in the center a few months ago, and they come just to visit, say hi. We love to love on the babies, especially as they're getting older. And I said to her, "Is there anything we can pray for you about?" She was still living with her mom and stepdad, and she said yes, because she had one of these vouchers, but she hadn't been able to find an apartment. She goes, "Can you pray that I can get into an apartment?" She said, "I think my relationship with my mother would be a lot better if we weren't living in the same place." And so I said, "We can do that. We'll be praying for you." And within less than 2 months, she was back just to say, "I'm into an apartment now." And so that was a way that we could help her. And as she continues to come in, hopefully do even more and more for her. So I want to share with you more from C.S. Lewis here. Because, again, he's saying, a great many people do now think that the mere state of being worried is in itself meritorious, and I don't think it is. And we know as Christians, we're not called to be worried. You know, life with Jesus is not a problem to be solved, but a glory to be discerned. And I will admit, in my younger years, I saw it more as a problem to be solved. But the older I get, and the more I see God working, not only in the life of my family, but in our church family and in the CareNet ministry, it truly is an adventure, and it's exciting just to see what God's going to do. Someone said to me about the $500,000 house that looks like it would be perfect. They were like, "Oh, but that's such a lot of money." And I said, "What I have learned in the years that I've been with CareNet is if we are in God's plan, if we're doing God's will, He could care less about the money. It's not important to Him. The most important thing that usually seems to be lacking, and I think we could say this in any ministry, is the human resource. It's the people. You know, people stepping up, people volunteering, people willing to get involved with messy lives, you know, of other people that God brings into our life." So he goes on to say, "We must, if it so happens, give our lives for others." And I think that's something we all know here as followers of Jesus. And this is the part that I hold on to. "But even while we're doing it, I think we're meant to enjoy our Lord and in Him our friends, our food, our sleep, our jokes, and the bird song and the frosty sunrise. It is very dark, but there's usually light enough for the next step or so." And that's what we're seeing. Two of the verses that we used at the banquet run through my mind almost every day. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And I always think of Peter stepping out of the boat, and he could walk on that water as long as he kept his eyes on Jesus. And it was only when he was focusing on the problems that, well, the waves, which would be our problems, that's when he started to sink. And I know David mentioned it earlier about the darkness. And I love John 1:5, how it says, his light shines through the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. We got an example of that yesterday. My husband and I went to the Hands Around the Capitol event over in Augusta. It was standing room only. And I don't know how many of you have heard of the 40 Days for Life prayer event that goes on. They hold them here in Maine twice a year. And one of the national leaders, his name is Hayward Robinson, came. He's a doctor who's retired, and he goes around the country now representing 40 Days for Life. And he told his story. As a doctor, he was trained to do abortions, and he didn't think much about it, and he met his wife when he was in school. His wife's a doctor, too. They were both trained, and he said, they would both go in moonlight and do abortions. He said, but then they met Jesus. They committed their life to the Lord. And he said it was after that that God so convinced them that that's not what they were supposed to be doing. And so now he dedicates his life to going around and letting people know, the difference that Jesus and prayer can make in a person's life. Today I'm leaving the movie Unplanned here. We got 10 copies at the center, and it talks about a girl, again, a girl who was raised in a Christian home, went off to college, and the first time she talked to a representative from Planned Parenthood was saying, well, I was raised, my mom and dad are pro-life, so I think I'm pro-life. And yet, from that statement, she became the youngest manager of a Planned Parenthood abortion facility. But it talks about the very first 40 Days for Life prayer event was held outside the abortion center she managed, and she walked away from that center. The people that started that prayer event, 40 Days of Prayer, they thought they would do it once. That prayer event has spread around the world now, and they know of over 6,000 confirmed cases of babies whose parents at that moment decided, no, we're not going to. You know, we are going to choose life for our child. And that is something that, again, going back to prayer, they keep praying. That abortion center is now their international headquarters for 40 Days for Life. So I'm going to leave you some information about 40 Days for Life. I'm going to leave you some information. I'm going to leave the movie for you, too. And what can we do here in Maine? What can we do locally? One of the things that I'm going to leave is they're trying to get 2,000 people to sign up for a Choose Life license plate for Maine. Sometimes I think we already have one, but they're talking about adopting pets. And I don't have anything against pets, and it's wonderful, but it would be nice if we could have something like this for children here in Maine. And it costs $25, and they have to have 2,000 people, but at the end, if you really don't want one, you don't have to get it. They just have to have that initial commitment. Another thing I want to leave in your office today is just all the different pregnancy help resources along with us here in Maine. We all work together. We can get a call in our office, and if the person's closer to Portland or closer to Rockland, we refer them to that center, and they do the same to us. It's like we're all, I loved it. Carl Mendolini, who was down at the, he was down there yesterday at the Capitol. He's been head of the Maine V-Day Society for the last 20 years, I think. They're the ones that do the really great ads on TV. the pro-life ads, and he was saying, have you ever noticed, he said, how people that are pro-life are happy? And he said, have you ever noticed how people that are pro-choice, they seem kind of mad, they seem kind of angry? And I had to laugh. I mean, Carl is like 80-some years old, and he's amazing. But I think that's so true, because I know no matter what happens, I know no matter what decision a girl makes, number one, I know the Lord loves her. I know our job is to pray for her. But it is so wonderful when somebody comes in and we're able to share Jesus with them. And sometimes it's, you know, the material goods that we can share. And I love it when we get to a point in our relationship with people when we can pray with them and we can share our stories with them and just offer them not just material goods, but that spiritual avenue that's even so much more important. So I just want to thank you for letting me be here. And you guys are great. Thank you for all the support, and please keep praying.